This is Metal Mike, and on this episode of the 80s Glam Metalcast, we talk to a pioneer from the Sunset Strip, from Odin and Lost Boys, Randy O. Randy talks about his most recent solo album, Coming Home, the decline of Western Civilization 2, and Axl Rose. Speaking of Axl Rose, stay tuned to after the interview with Randy, because we'll talk about my recent video, Glam Metal Beatdown, where I pit Axl against Vince Neil in the ring in a WWE-style match. And guess what? The video got me blocked by Vince. So, here's the interview with Randy. Check it out. Randy, welcome to the 80s Glam Metalcast.
How you doing, brother?
I'm doing awesome, man. Thanks for having me. How are you, my man?
Doing great.
All right.
So, hey, so you did an album last year called Coming Home. Why don't you tell everybody about that one?
So basically that was kind of a bucket list for me. I had been working on that record probably over like the past 15 years. And, I started listening to some of the demos and some of the recordings over the years. And my wife, Rachel, just said, you know what, you need to complete that. So, what I did is, there's this drummer friend of mine, Roger Carter, he did the John 5 stuff. They record all of John 5 stuff at his studios, the Doghouse Studio over here in Woodland Hills. And I said, Roger, I pretty much have this bucket list. I want to record these songs that I have. He said, hey, you know, how about you shoot me over some of the demos? You know, let me listen to it and, you know, let's put something together. So basically what had happened is then, you know, he kind of got the demos. I kind of... you know, we did some arrangements and stuff. And then, he's been really good friends with Matt Bastinet. I'm sure you know who he is. He pretty much has played with everybody. He was David Lee Roth. Mm-hmm. Right now he's on tour with Elton John. Just a killer cat. He got Toshi. He's like the band leader of the Jimmy Kimmel Show on guitar. Will Hollis from the Eagles on keyboard. And I don't know who I'm missing out. But anyway, so we all just kind of went in. Toshi kind of wrote the music out. You know, it's pretty simple, you know, stuff. And then we just went in and started recording the record. And probably out of about 30, demos that I had, we picked those. Actually, it was 10 songs, and then we just ended up putting on the 9 songs. That's kind of how that all went down. And then... you know, that's kind of how that all happened. So I was, you know, I dug it. It's totally different than, you know, probably the stuff that I've done in the past. You know, I had there was a couple of Lost Boys songs on there. Same Old Day and Lonely Man that I kind of redid a little bit and, you know, did them the way that I kind of originally always wanted them, because on the Lost Boys record, there was just a lot of, you know, stuff that kind of went down that I wasn't really happy with the production and the, you know, just kind of how that all happened. So basically in a nutshell, that's kind of what I did. And, you know, I'm happy with it. I dig the way that it all sounds, and, you know, you got to do it because you love to do it. I'm not obviously not out there doing it to try to like, you know, become some, you know, rock star or, you know, make $1 million. You know, I did it because I love to do it. It's just something that I needed to complete in my life. So kind of that's kind of what that was all about, you know, and I got to work with my wife. We got to write some songs together. And, you know, it was just a good thing. My cousin Jerry, I don't know if you know my cousin Jerry from Warrant.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So he's the bass player from Warrant. So Down Boys Records, they're the ones that, you know, released it. And, you know, he helped me through all of it. And, like, one of the cool things about it now is, like, you know, I made CDs, and he was telling me, you know, there's no reason to even make a CD. And I'm like, well, you know, that's, you know, I understand what you're saying. You know, he goes, you know, they don't even have CDs in cars anymore. And I just said, well, I want to go through the process to know what it's like from, you know, the beginning to the end. And also, you know, my daughter's an artist. I wanted to make, you know, a record cover, and I just kind of wanted to do the whole process, you know, one last time, you know? And, so, So yeah, that's kind of where that's at. But oh yeah, so back to my cousin Jerry. So what he does now too, I don't know if you've talked to him else, he has a publishing company, and what, you know, for the last, say, 8 years, him and Eric, they kind of done a lot of like reality TV, kind of, I guess it would be lower end, you know, on the scale, but you know, they've helped out a lot of people that I know, and they've got like 70,000, I think, songs on their like library that they kind of have put together. And so now he's just signed like a big publishing deal with like the CBS, NBC, ABC, all, you know what I mean? So, you know, what you hope for now, at least with me, is I hope for maybe I get a little, you know, my music maybe on a TV show or maybe on a feature film, and then maybe you make a few bucks that way, you know?
Sure.
So that's just kind of where that's at.
Yeah, I mean, I was listening to it. I really enjoyed it. Obviously, it's a little bit more laid back than what we're used to from you, but it all fits. I could still hear that sound of your voice. And, I mean, it's really cool. I thought the lyrics are very reflective, and sometimes they're kind of funny, like the one song about your daughter there. That's funny.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's a cool album.
Yeah. I did it. I got it done. And, I mean, I'm working on new music now, and it's what I love to do. It's in my soul, you know, it's part of me, and without it, I don't feel complete. So I'm glad that I was able to get that done and just kind of feel like, hey, I finally, you know, finished it and completed it. You know, some people love it, some people don't, but whatever, I did it for me, you know. And if there's the few fans out there that dig me, you know, they love it, and they're glad that they can, you know, listen to what I have to say, you know. So it's cool.
You kind of touched on something that I was going to ask you, is that you kind of feel like that is, when you're a musician, I mean, isn't it really kind of hard to turn off the music? Because it's probably always still, even though you haven't done an album in a long time, there's got to be songs just popping up in your head randomly. Is that kind of how this came about?
Well, those were just songs over the last 15 years. Like I said, I probably had like 30 demos, and some of them probably were some of the stuff that maybe my, you know, the metalers would have probably dug more. But I was just like, kind of too, like it was right around the time Tom Petty died. And like, I've been listening to a lot of Tom Petty and like Tommy Bolin and kind of stuff like that. But yeah, as far as the question goes, I cannot get music out of my soul. You know, it's like every day, you know, or most every day, there's some thought going through my head of a lyric or a melody. Or, you know, sometimes I act on it, sometimes I don't, but it's just, you know, I mean, I'm a singer. I consider myself kind of a singer, not a great singer, but more of a songwriter and not really a great guitar player. I'm kind of more of a rhythm guitar player. So as far as a musician, yeah, I'm a musician, but I'm not like the greatest musician or the greatest singer, but I just kind of feel like, yeah, it's definitely in me, and I can't let go of it. You know, but I mean, I'm not 25 years old, you know, and who wants to see a, you know, some 56-year-old old man get up there and, you know, and play, you know, unless you're, you know, somebody that's maybe been established in the past. Not too many people, you know.
Right.
So, I mean, but it's what it is, and it's all good. I'm, you know, I love my life. I couldn't be any happier, and it's all good. You know, it's hard. It's not easy to make a record, you know, unless you've done it. It's not an easy thing to do. It's a lot of work, and, you know, there's a lot that goes into it, you know, from the beginning till the end. So unless you've done it, you don't know. And there'll be people, all these haters out there, but it's like they don't know what's happening or what goes into it, you know, and all the work that it takes. So.
Well, you touched on your voice, man. I think you got a killer voice, and it's an interesting voice. And I think that's a lot of times what people would rather gravitate to than, let's say, there's somebody like, you know, Jeff Tate, who's, you know, technically this incredible singer. But a lot of times I like somebody that's just got a little bit of character. You know what I mean? They don't have to be the greatest, you know, when it comes to, you know, virtuoso singer. But I like people with some balls, you know, some character in their voice, you know?
Yeah. No, I totally agree. Although I love Jeff Tate.
Oh, I do too.
Pretty awesome. You know, but I also love David Lee Roth.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I still love David Lee Roth. I went and saw him at the Hollywood Bowl. You know, he's he's still going to always be David Lee Roth, you know? I love him.
Speaking of great. David Lee, so who are some of the guys that made Randy O? Who are your influences?
Well, okay, so who are my influences? So, I mean, you know, early on, I wouldn't want to say that they made me, but I mean, my parents were listening to like Leon Russell, Cat Stevens, you know, Simon and Garfunkel, Carole King, you know, that kind of stuff. You know, Led Zeppelin, and more so the Stones. But then, as the person that actually made me get into music, when I was probably about 16 years old, I was working for my grandpa, and he had like box seats at the Forum, and an older guy was like, he was probably 18. He said, "Hey, man," his dad was like the vice president. He said, "Hey, I got some tickets to the Forum to see this band, Van Halen, you know, and mm-hmm. there's two seats and they're the box seats." I had no idea about what a box seat was, or really even what a concert was. And so we went there, you know, got the program. I'm kind of looking at the program going, "Fuck, man, this guy looks cool. Who is this?" You know, they hadn't come on yet, though, looking at Eddie. And I want to say it was like Jamie's Crying they were playing on the radio, or maybe it was Running with the Devil, I think, was the first single. So I kind of heard that and I liked it. Well, then when David Lee Roth came on, I really had no idea what girls were, or, you know, none of that. When I saw him and what I saw happen in front of me, I just went, "Fuck, man." You just, that feeling of your body just pulsating and, "Oh, look at women," and, you know, the feeling that you get for that, and just what he made me do, I just went, "I want to do that. I want to be him. That's right. What I want to do." And then I, you know, I totally wasn't like right away singing. You know, I kind of was playing drums and taking drum lessons, and then I kind of made the switch. And then I started off in this band called Hyde. And then I went from Hyde, no, I went from Mary Poppins to Hyde, which, and then I went into Odin. And then I auditioned for Odin, which was kind of a long story. I never thought I was going to get it. My brother kind of turned me on to Odin. They were playing down in Pasadena. My brother, who was in Lost Boys with me, he brought me down to some show down there. And I was just like, "God, they're fucking so incredible." And they were just, you know, 15, 16-year-old kids just pretty much shredding the way they did, you know, on all the records. They were amazing. And basically their singer left and they were looking for a singer, and I was working at this place called Builders Emporium. I went down and auditioned, and I knew that they didn't dislike me, but I could just tell that they weren't totally into me. So like maybe for, I want to say, a couple of weeks, they were still looking, and there was this other singer in my area that I knew they wanted him in the band, because I could just hear, you know, I heard through the grapevine, and he was more of a cover guy. And they weren't able to get him. And I would have people from my work call them, you know, every day. "Hey, you know, just ask, if, you know, hey, are you looking for a singer?" And they'd say, "Yeah, you know, you want to come out and audition?" And they'd bullshit them. And eventually, Brad Parker, the guy who was one of the lead guitar players besides Jeff, he called me up and he said, "Hey, man, you got a PA, right?" I go, "Yep, I got a PA." He goes, "I'm going to come up and get you, and we're going to go down to the studio and we're going to start practicing." And that was it. I never left. And they worked with me and helped me with my voice, and, you know, and that it, you know, their songs weren't anything, you know, like, they were a lot different. And then once I joined, you know, it kind of changed them into our sound, which was Odin, you know. So hope I'm making sense to you.
Definitely, man. So obviously, okay, we'll get into it. So Odin got notoriety from being in Decline of Western Civilization, and I've read interviews with you. You've talked about this stuff a million times. But I guess my only question, and then I have a couple comments too. But I guess my question is, when you watch that today, what goes through your mind when you watch that whole movie, or even the section you're in?
Well, I mean, once again, there's a ton of haters. There's people that absolutely, they said that movie changed their life. That came here because they saw me in that hot tub. And then there's people that said they wish I would have fucking killed myself. But it's like, you know, it's, When you're, so for one, I work in the motion picture industry. We're putting on a show where we're being filmed. You know, we knew that.
Yep.
And but also there was a lot of truth to it. I mean, like people will say, you know, you want to be as big as Robert Lee Plant or Jim Morrison. Well, of course I want to be as, why wouldn't you want to be as big as them? If you're a singer, what, don't you want to be as the biggest fucking rock star out there? I mean, that was my mindset. Now, was I as good as them? No, not even close, right? But why not want to, you know, be like them? I'm sure that these, you know, Major League Baseball players or football players, you know, my son's a Division I football player. You know, he wants to be like Gronkowski, the Patriots someday. He's a tight end, right? You have these people that you look up to and you strive to be like them. So, like, looking back at it, I have no regret. In the beginning, I was kind of embarrassed a little bit, but it's just what it was. Now I look back at it, I'm part of history. That movie is going to be around forever. And there's kids now, young kids, they trip on it, you know, right. they wish they could be part of that. I mean, we were part of an era that obviously nobody will ever be part of. That was like the last of rock stars as far as I'm concerned. Right. And I don't know how old you are, if you were around that, but I mean, it was the most amazing time that I could ever remember as far as music, musicians, people practicing and playing and wanting to, you know, out there just working and going for it, you know, as far as the girls, as far as, there's no scene like that. I don't think there is anywhere in the world or has been since, you know. I don't know, you probably know better than me, but it was, you know, it's pretty amazing. So, you know, back to the decline, I have no regrets. It's, you know, it's what it is, and it's part of history, right?
Right.
You know? That movie's part of history.
I'm 43. So I'll tell you a little bit about me. I watched it, you know, when it came out. That's when I got into music, you know, mid 80s. So I hadn't seen it in a long time. So I interviewed Nader DePriest, and I went back and I watched it, and I was like, whoa. Like, this is not what I thought it was, because when I was a kid, I thought, oh, this movie's so cool, you know, Odin and London and Gene Simmons, you know, the whole gamut of them. And then when I rewatched it, I was like, man, this whole thing is like trying to put like a negative spin on it, try to make people look
totally
ridiculous, right? And
yeah,
it's crazy.
Well, yeah, I mean, I remember going to the premiere and people felt sorry for me, you know. And you're exactly right. She edited it that way. She was making a movie to, you know, that looks like the little part she puts in, like Jeff running across stage, he trips, you know?
Yeah.
Well, that's like one part of the, you know, 20 hours that we filmed, that, you know what I mean? And she just found all that stuff. It's like the assless pants. Like, those weren't even my assless pants. I live with Chris Holmes. So Chris, you know, Chris does his part, right? I think a couple days before me,
right.
He'd been, you know, smoking coke and partying, and he came home and he's like, "Fuck, man!" He's like, "I gotta go do this filming." He goes, "Hey, do me a favor, go get those vodka bottles and fill them up with water." I put the water in those vodka bottles. That was not vodka,
right?
You know what I mean? Yeah. I filled them up. I know exactly where I did it and what apartment we lived in, and then a few days later, he said, "I want you to wear my buttless pants." You know, he goes, "I want you to wear these." He goes, "No, I want you to wear these, but you can't wear any pants underneath them." You know, because that's how he used to wear it at the Troubadour. He would wear them like that. Like, are you fucking kidding me? Because it's gonna make you a legend, dude. I fucking dare you to do it. I go, "Fuck it, I'll wear them, Chris." You know, and that's why I wore them in that show. I never wore those fucking pants before ever. And if I did, I'd have spandex on them or you know, whatever. So, I mean, when I came out with those two, they were like, "What? What are you doing, Ray?" I go, "Fuck it, I'm going to wear them. Fuck it. You know, we're doing a movie." Yeah. I don't know if I could cuss on your podcast.
Oh, you can. Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny that you talk about the trip, because the thing that caught my eye when I watched it previously, you know, to interview Nader, is there's a part where I think they're trying to set the Russian flag on fire or something like that. And he can't get it lit. So I'm thinking to myself, well, this is shit you would cut out. You know what I mean? You wouldn't play this unless you were trying to make it look kind of silly or goofy or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. So anyways, yeah, that's part of history, period. Good or bad, it's definitely there. And, you know, I still make money on that movie, you know?
That's awesome.
you know, not a lot, but I went, like, they re-released it, I got money. Every year I get checks. So, you know, they're little, but if that's been, that's 35 years ago, I'm still getting checks for it. So
I think also whatever. You probably can relate to this, you know, having kids, and I have kids. And when I think about, like, you know, these kids going, you know, teenagers going out to L.A. to live and become a rocker, and they're doing all these drugs and all this stuff. And I don't know about you, man, but I'd kill my kid before I let him go out and do something like that. You know what I mean? I would.
Well, yeah, I mean, I mean, my parents were pretty, you know, for one, both my dads left, you know, I had a stepdad, they left, and then I was with my mom, and my mom had four boys, so, you know, we just, you know, I think by the time I was 17, I was on my own, but I mean, I don't know, I think it's different now. Back then, people were going for it.
Right.
You know, and laying it on the line. I mean, I remember being in a room probably 10 by 12 with four guys, or like for Lost Boys after Odin, really with not a dime in my pocket, running a studio going, I'm going to be a fucking rock star. I'm getting a record deal. I'm going to do this. And all I did for almost a year was write those songs, live in that studio, and work. And you know what? Look it, I got that record deal, you know? So I don't think kids today, they're not out there going for it. I mean, there's no scene, you know? I mean, even my son now, I mean, he plays piano and he sings here and there, but he went and played for 15 minutes before I came up here. We would play for fucking 15 hours, you know?
Right. Like, he's it's different.
Band. I mean, we would go and play a set and have people come in our garage and then, you know, rest for a few minutes or an hour, and we'd do another set, and then we'd have new people come over and party, and then, you know, it just, that never stopped. So I think it's just different. There's too many distractions, and I wish there'd be more, you know, more kids, and there'd be more of a music scene for them, but I don't know. I just think there's too many distractions for, you know, I guess. I don't know what's happening with the music industry, but it's definitely not really happening that I can see.
I read an article a while back, or maybe it was an interview with you or somebody, kind of, I don't even know where it came from, but somebody was saying how, you know, Axl Rose took his whole shtick from you. And I guess I never really noticed it at the time, but then when I went back and watched it, you know, I watched him, you know, and watched you in those early days, and I was like, wow, he really did kind of, you know, borrow a lot from you. What's your take on that?
Well, if I say anything about it, then people just think I'm, you know, got issues, but I mean, the bottom line is, oh, you could look at look when Odin was here and look when they came, you know, we were around with, we were doing it when the Motley and the Rat and the first wave came, Quiet Riot, Great White. And then there was a second wave when we were there before anybody came, you know, and he was at our shows, and we were managed by the same lady, Vicki Hamilton. Now, as far as singing goes, and of course, I'm not as good as him. You know what I mean? He obviously is a multi zillionaire, and you know what I mean. But yeah, did he watch me and do my things? But you know what? It's like, who did I get my shtick from? You know, I used to go watch Richard Black from Shark Island and David Lee Roth, and you know, so it's like we were all ripping off each other. But I mean, I definitely had my trip. I remember seeing Axl at Gazzari's before their record was released. You know, he was at more than one of our shows, needless to say, but right when that record came, and he came up, you know, to talk to me, and I didn't give him the fucking time of day. I came up to him, I'm like, hey, what's up, William? You know, I'm 6'3", he's 5'9", or whatever, and that, it just kind of shut it off. I was pretty much like, fuck you, dude. You know, like, I had a chip on my shoulder, and I, you know, looking back, I wish I wasn't that way to a lot of people, but I thought, hey, I'm on a one track. You know, I'm going down this path, and you know, stay out of my way. You know, now looking back, I've probably pissed a lot of people off, and probably a lot of people thought I was, you know, a dick, an asshole, or whatever. But I was just doing my own trip. You know, and then you see all these bands. You know, like we were there on that first wave. You know, and you see these bands like, you know, Poison, and even my cousin's band, Warrant, and you know, I could keep, and they're, here they are, they're all getting record deals, and I'm seeing them on MTV, and I'm like wondering, like, well, what the fuck am I doing wrong? You know, I mean, we're packing these places out, you know, we're doing multiple nights, you know, why not us, you know? And that, I mean, that's one reason why I left Odin, because of Vicky. Like Vicky was saying, you know, you're not going to make it in that band. You know, you're a star. You need to start a new band, and, you know, I'll get you a record deal and you're going to be a star, you know? So, I mean, so anyways, I don't know. I'm kind of getting sidetracked, but, you know, there's another thing too, is it's like, so like my cousin Jerry, like he'll straight out tell you, if it wasn't for you, Randy, I would never have done what I'm doing, you know? And like, I'm friends with Jeremy. I don't know if you know the band Lit.
No.
They're kind of they were a very successful kind of like 90s band.
Okay.
But I mean, he's come to my shows and played with us, and he'll straight out say, without you, you know, without you, Lit would never exist. We loved Odin, but we idolized you. His brother, we just idolized you. And I've had, you know, in the last year, I've had him, he text messages me like he's almost in tears, like just saying, this fucking record, this Lost Boys record, I ripped these riffs off from my record. And I'm like, hey, that's cool, you know? I mean, because I know there's simple riffs and stuff, but it's just like, you know, he's just basically telling me, I wouldn't be what I am today without you. And if you were to talk to him, he would tell you that, you know, and it's very sincere. And so, I mean, I know there's a lot of people, because we were around in the beginning, that were influenced by us. And, you know, it's just what it is. And then in the end, I have no regrets, because I also feel this. If I were to ever have made it like Guns N' Roses, I don't think I'd be alive today. I don't think I could have handled it, because I'm such a homebody. I get homesick very easily. Even when we would go on the road, as little as we did with Odin, 30 days here, 15 days here, I was always homesick, you know? So that's that story, you know? So I think it all worked out just how it was supposed to work out.
Why do you think that Odin didn't make it in one of those waves? Because like you said, you did see all these guys. Was it something to do with management? Didn't get that lucky break? What was it?
This is what I think. So in the beginning, like Lars and James and all of, like, we'd go to San Francisco. We were a different band. If you listen to our early demos, I don't want to say we were a Metallica, but we were like a early Black Sabbath, kind of a progressive band, you know, even kind of like an Ozzy sounding vocals with, you know, some heaviness, maybe a little bit of screaming, but that's where we should have stuck.
Yeah.
That's how we built our fan base. And then what had happened, like, you know, I mean, Lars would come down and visit us, and then basically that first wave went through, and then this, like, the spandex and, like, the glam, and we started, like, kind of crossing over, like, dressing like that, thinking, well, this will help us. We'll look like Rat, or we'll look more fashionable. And now we'll try to write more of a commercial song. And we started kind of like, you know, we just started changing. And this is just my opinion. We didn't stay true to what we were, you know. And I just think if we would have just stuck to what we were from the very beginning, I think that we would, you know, once again, it's my opinion, I think that we really would have made a much bigger mark and probably would have been around forever, because I feel like there's plenty of sauce in the bottle with, you know, with Jeff and us as far as writing. I don't think we would have ever ran out of material, really. Mm-hmm. And I got that line from Jack Black, too, by the way. But I saw him say that about Queen or something. He goes, they never ran out of sauce. There was always plenty of sauce in the bottle.
No way.
That was a good line. But you know, so, I mean, I think that's what happened. I think that you just got to stay true to what you are. And I don't think we did. We were changing, you know, we were just changing, just trying. We were desperate, man. We saw so many bands get record deals, and then you see them on MTV in 4 or 5 months. You know, and it was killing us. It was like, you know, it was killing us, you know, Ben, and that, you know, that's just how that was. I mean, I remember seeing Poison come in their very first day. They came in, they were from Pennsylvania or whatever, at the Troubadour, Doug Weston's Troubadour, and here they are, and I see these guys come in, and I, you know, they, hey, man, come check out our band. We're going to be playing Thursday night, you know, whatever, Brad or whoever. We watch them, and I'm literally like going, they are fucking horrible. This band is awful. They're horrible. You know, I just, it was so, you know, they're pop. They're so poppy, right?
Yeah.
And they're not horrible. And but I mean, musically, we were just like, we thought we were so much better. But next thing I know, here they are. They're getting signed. You know, they're on Enigma. They're freaking on all over MTV. And we're just like, you know, you just don't even know what to do with yourself. You're like, what are we doing wrong? You know, how did this happen?
So on Lost Boys, you do the Lost Boys album, and you get on Atlantic, you get on MTV, so things are starting to go in your favor, right?
Well, I mean, it was at the end of that era. So,
right.
I mean, so realistically from the day, so I got the record deal because it was my record deal. I was the one that started the band. People say, oh, yeah, Jeff, you know, Jeff put that band together. Jeff wasn't even in the band. I called Jeff in because the guitar player I had in the studio was not cutting it. I knew Jeff. Jeff was an Armored Saint. I go, Jeff, can you come in? And I need you to, I'll sing. I'm going to sing. I literally sang all those leads and all that stuff out. You know, I would sing to him and how I wanted this and how I wanted that. And of course he did his thing, but I mean, that was my trip 100%. You know, there was a couple of songs that we had, you know, put together maybe in Odin or in the past. Well, yeah. So yeah, basically we get the record deal. You know, make the record, which I was not happy with from day one. I wanted to fire the producer. I was like, oh my God, this is a nightmare, you know, and that's another story. And then, and even the selection of songs, because there were songs that like the publishing companies really liked, but the players weren't good enough to play them. Mm-hmm. I mean, as crazy as that sounds, it's just like, I did my demos with Danny, the guitar player from Darling Cruel, and the drummer from Salty Dog, and the bass player from Faster Pussycat. So when I did my demo to get the deals, I had some really good players, but when I put my band together, they were, you know, they weren't the greatest players, so I was like kind of limited on the tunes I could put on the record. So that was kind of frustrating. You know, looking back now, I should have just used all studio cats, you know, and then got the players when the record was done. But anyway, so once the record gets done, shoot the video, but now all this new music's happening. The Nirvana, the you know, the Soundgarden, they're that style, and it's coming on MTV, and it's basically the end of that era. They, you know, I think they played us on, you know, Headbangers Ball, and there were some other random places that got played, and then the next thing I know, they drop us. They drop me. You know, they pretty much won't even talk to me, and they're done with me, you know, and that was kind of the end of that whole thing. You know, it didn't last very long. You know, went to New York and did some shows locally and, you know, played a gig in New York, and it was over. It was the end of it for me anyways. I mean, there was some bands that I think were still doing it, but it really died out, you know. And it's you know, I was friends with Janie Lane, and one thing he said, and there's an interview of him, you could watch it on YouTube, and he talks about how everybody was doing those ballads, and it's like, it wasn't what we were. We were all kind of metalers, you know. Yep. We all were making metal tunes, you know, and then it was, next thing you know, it was just every band, it was just like, right, it was ballad after ballad after ballad after ballad. And I just think people kind of were over it, you know. It was like, I don't know what you thought about that. They were, not that there weren't some really great ballads, but it's like, I want to hear a metal record, you know?
Yeah, those are the tunes that I usually don't care for. But I got to say, Janie Lane, I mean, he's done some pretty killer ones, but most of them I don't care for ballads, no.
He was such a great songwriter, man. I felt like, you know, with my cousin, he had some serious demons, Janie, and he just could not fight the alcoholism. I mean, we played Rocklahoma with them, and they were headlining, and he had just been sober, and then Janie Saint Jane, I think the guy from Black and Blue, Janie.
Yeah, he replaced
him.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so he replaced him, but then he was there with Black and Blue, and they almost thought that he was going to have to come and sing that night. And then after that, I think they went to Vegas, and I think that's on YouTube. He, you know, he just couldn't remember the words, but he couldn't stop drinking, man. He just couldn't do it. And what a great person. What a dude, had such a huge heart, and what a great musician and a great songwriter. So that was tragedy, you know, but, it happens to a lot of people in this business, man. Like I always say, these people that you got to pay the devil his dues, man. a lot, you know, as horrible as it sounds, and I'm sure a lot of musicians can relate to it. You just look at all the bands and all the band members lost, or all the tragedy that follows that, you know. Yeah. So, not to get weird, but
no,
I think
understand.
There's some truth to it. I think, you know, people can't live, you know, they're successful and then they're not successful. They don't know how to deal with it, right?
Yeah.
You know, maybe that's what it truly is. They're millionaires and now they don't have a pot to piss in. They don't know how to deal with it.
Yeah.
So,
well, I think
right?
the classic thing that you've always see, I actually, this is so weird because I just said this to somebody that I work with today, is that if you have some kind of issue that you don't rectify, right? Money will mm-hmm. not correct the issue, right? I think it will just perpetuate nope. it. You know what I mean? So if you don't yep. correct this thing that's wrong, and that's why so many rock stars, like you said, OD, kill themselves, you know, whoever, it doesn't matter, if actors, whoever, if there's something mm-hmm. wrong, it's got to be corrected. Money is not going to
yeah.
correct it. Fame is not going to correct it. So
no, you're absolutely right.
Well, hey, we got off on a tangent. I wanted to go back to the Lost Boys here. Okay.
Okay.
So,
all right.
So, well, first of all, I just got to say that Crying Out, amazing. Amazing song. Love it.
All right.
And there's a couple things that strike me interesting. They're just different about this album. And it's some of your vocals are a lot different. And maybe this is something you're going to touch on with, you weren't happy with some of the production things, but like when I listen to Lonely Man and Cool Me Down, those are two, for example, I mean, you almost sound like a heavy metal Louis Armstrong at some times. Am I crazy or what?
So what, you know, what's trip is like, I was experimenting at that time with Louis Armstrong and
okay.
seeing these like, I was scatting. I actually did some demos, like just scatting, and I was really like, I was trying to just find myself, because I'm like, am I gonna do this? Am I gonna do that? And I had so many different songs, and once again, it was song selection. It was like, it was kind of limited on what songs I could put on that record, and you know, that's why I redid Lonely Man. Like, if you listen to the new record, it's Pops' song. That's my vision of it. Mm-hmm. More of like, I don't know if you've listened to it.
I did. I've listened to the new one.
That's kind of how I wanted to be. Now, why I went that way, I guess because I could, and I was just like, you know, and once again, there's people that dug it. There's people that couldn't stand it. They're just like, why did he do that? And, you know, I guess I did it because I could do it. And I'm an artist and I was experimenting and it was just a different sound that I like. And, you know, that's kind of, you know, it's David Lee Roth too. You know, it's very David Lee Roth and Jim Dandy, you know, it's a lot of, you know, that old blues and I'm into the old blues and, you know, I still scat. That's really how I a lot of times how I'll come up with melodies is just that, you know, scabadib and bottom, you know, whatever. They're not
working. Cool, man. I like
it. But there's some kind of melody happening, and then you go back and listen, and then you could add the words to it. But I've always, you know, that was just me, you know. Hopefully I didn't piss off too many people, and it's what it is. And I'm sure if I would have went more straightforward rock and done more of like, you know, a lot of the Crying Out kind of stuff all the way through it, it probably maybe would have got a little better, you know, more likes, I guess. I don't know.
It's sad that it got grouped in with all that, like the hair model, because I mean, I think it's kind of an eclectic record. You know what I mean? It's a little all over the place, but in a good way.
Well, yeah, I know people always said that about me. You're kind of all over the place. Even this new record, they're like, all the songs are kind of just all over, you know? It's what it is, you know? It's just what it is.
So when it comes to Lost Boys, like, this thing's out of print and it's not on Spotify. I mean, do you think it'll ever get out there in circulation?
No, it is now. It's on now. Warner Brothers, I just got a statement from Warner Brothers. It's on. It should be on Spotify, and I know it's on the YouTube, and the Warner Brothers released it.
Oh, good.
So
okay,
it's on there now. It's on Spotify for sure. So you can type it in now. It should be on there. I've seen it on there, but that was just in the last 6 months. So I actually just got a statement from them, you know, that I still owe money. So that's always nice. they'll never recoup it, but whatever. Yeah. You know? So.
Well, hey, man, it's been a great conversation. What do you want to say to all your fans in closing here?
If anybody's listening, go check out YouTube and give me some likes on YouTube. I'm actually working on Same Old Day Right Now video. I'm going to release that and, maybe play some acoustic gigs around town. And, if you want to buy a CD, go to eBay. They're on eBay. I don't know if people still have CD players, but yeah, whatever. It's out there. I'm doing it, and I'll probably release something maybe at the end of the year. But now I think I'm just going to do EPs. You just do three song EPs, I hear. So that's probably what I'll do from now on. Maybe someday Odin will play again. I don't know.
Awesome. Well, hey, man, thanks for talking with me.
Hey, thank you for your time, and thank you for thinking of me, man. Having me on, I appreciate it.
You got it, brother. Have a good night.
All right. Hey, you too, my man. Bye.
Wow, that was a great interview with Randy O. Now, Metal Mike, we have to talk about this matchup between Axl Rose and Vince Neil on the 80s Glam Metal Beatdown.
You, your brothers, and myself, we worked very hard to make a fun video, and the whole outcome was just based on a Twitter poll. And guess what? I get blocked by Vince.
Wow, I mean, this is pretty insane. First Gene Simmons and now Vince Neil?
Everyone that follows me knows I've never said a negative thing about either guy. Now, this could be done by the people that run their accounts, or maybe they were getting too many notifications, and I got caught in the crossfire. I don't know. Well, I was definitely not blocked when the video was posted because I tagged them in it, and then after that, I was. But you know what? Kiss, Motley Crue, still my favorite bands, and I'll still promote them on my site. So, guess what? We're going to do it again. It's going to be Paul Stanley versus Dee Snider. So look for Twitter. You'll be able to vote on the outcome, and we will do it again. I promise this one will be more elaborate than the last one. So, everybody, stay healthy, stay safe, stay indoors. Watch past episodes of the 80s Glam Metalcast. Take care of yourselves. Rock on!